background, the cars carrying the coffins of the martyrs are here since a couple of hours ago. Several, thousands of people, Iranians from all walks of life, have gathered here today in the Iranian capital, Tehran, to first to mark the Quds Day, to show their solidarity with the Palestinian nation, who have for nearly 6 months been under, let's say, incessant bombardment, brutality of the Israeli regime. Thousands have lost their lives, innocent civilians. Now, the other reason that they have gathered here today and marked this day greater than the previous years is these venerated martyrs, who you can see in the background. People here gather chanting anti-Israel and anti-US slogans, calling for holding the regime, the Israeli regime, responsible for the crimes, particularly its attack or its strike on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Syria. Now, the procession is just about to begin, actually. Right now, people are just paying tribute to the deceased, to the slain martyrs, and after that, the procession will begin, as I explained to you.
Okay, well, Matthew, because we have, on the one hand, we have that procession, and then we have, of course, the actual Quds Day demonstration. So, of course, we will be checking back with you and probably seeing the people turn out in mass. And I'd like, you know, during the day, I'm sure you're going to be talking to individuals and why they have shown up. Why are they there? Again, we have seen, I was just saying time and time again, of the Iranian nation turning out in support of their martyrs and also of the oppressed around the world. Thanks so much, Mehdi Abbasian, there in Tehran. And thank you, viewers. We're continuing our live coverage of demonstrations and everything that's happening throughout the world this on International Quds Day. I'm going to cross back over to Tim get... Tim, are you still with me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Tim, I was talking about sacrifice and, of course, especially dealing with talking about the Iranian nation and the 45 years since the revolution, that it has been targeted time and time again, continuously, by the United States and the hegemonic front in general. Wahab Abbas with me. I want your perspective of what it takes when we're talking about sacrifice and we're talking about over the years and what Iran has had to give to get to where it is today. Okay, Tim, I think I have you back. Sorry about that. Tim, this is for you.
Yes, so you were right. You mentioned before resistance at the core, that core principle behind the struggle for the Palestinian cause and for many other causes. But in terms of Iran, yes, the persistence, the sacrifice of Iran has been extraordinary, really. In fact, I think that many of us are looking at trying to understand the extraordinary patience that the Iranian Republic has with the Zionists and their attacks and the many Iranian advisors, for example, that have been murdered in and forces supporting the Syrian government, for example, that have been murdered in Syria. And, of course, the terrorist attacks on Iran itself, on Kerman, the recent one on the Pakistani side. So there are enormous pressures, enormous vicious attacks, precisely because Iran represents and leads the axis of resistance in the region, supporting all of the Palestinian resistance factions. It's something that's not well understood around the world, and of course it's a focus of the censorship of the discussions we can have in the Western world. They allow in a lot of the Western media, let's say the social media, to some degree criticisms of the Zionists, of the imperialists. You can criticise Netanyahu, you can criticise Washington, but supporting the resistance is a red line for their control, their thought control, their attempts to censor public debate, basically, because the resistance is seen as essentially subversive to their project. But of course, what's been happening in recent times with the resistance in Lebanon, the resistance from Yemen, supporting their brothers and sisters in Gaza, has been re-educating young people in the Western world in extraordinary ways. People now support Lebanon and Yemen, even if they don't understand what it is about the resistance in Lebanon, even if they don't understand what's going on in Yemen, even if they hear something about Houthi rebels, they don't understand there is a revolutionary government in Yemen. But nevertheless, there is an instinctual respect for and recognition of what the Yemeni people are representing now in supporting Gaza and trying to prevent this genocide. So that is the real resistance, and it's getting recognition. There's an education going on through the actual actions of the resistance in that region now. And I should not forget the Iraqi resistance, which has been joined in direct attacks on the Zionists.
Well, let's look at in general. You're talking about the resistance, and you know, if we go back again to 1979, in the very beginning, when this day was proclaimed to be International Quds Day by Imam Khomeini. I mean, Iran was standing alone in so many ways, and of course, then dealing with the 8 years U.S.-Iraqi imposed war, Iran was really struggling and alone. And then now we fast forward 45 years ago. You've just talked about, for example, Hezbollah, or we're talking about the Yemeni resistance or the Iraqi resistance or, of course, the Syrian resistance, and this growing resistance in the region, and also the connection with the global south. Let's talk about the overall situation where we were in dealing with the Palestinian situation back then, 1979, 1980, and what has happened and what is happening today with it.
Yes, you're quite right, you've seen enormous changes in that time. Iran, as you say, was not the strong nation back in 1979. It struggled with the war with Saddam Hussein's Iraq. Saddam Hussein himself was betraying his neighbors, working against his neighbors, working with the U.S. until the U.S. finally fell out with him. There was division in Yemen. There was no Hezbollah in Lebanon, for example, and they, of course, were inspired by the Iranian Revolution. So this is why, of course, there is such an obsession in Tel Aviv, in Washington, with Iran, because Iran represents a support for a constant, a pole star, if you like, for the development of the resistance, the development of independent peoples, asserting with dignity their independence in the region. And they gain the support from Iran. And it's not to do with religion, as I often say in the West here. It's not about a cult of a particular religion or a faction there, because, of course, Palestine is, there are very few Shia Muslims in Palestine, but nevertheless there is a solidarity with Palestine, with Syria, which is not a religious regime, for example, and Yemen, which has its own Zaydi revivalism culture, you know. So there is an extraordinary constellation, and I might add, internationally now we have strategic relationships between Iran and Russia and Cuba and Venezuela and even little countries like Nicaragua. There is a great internationalization of the resistance going on at the moment, and Iran is a very important player in that.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Tim Anderson, Director of Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies out of Sydney. And thank you, viewers, for staying with us right here at Press TV as we continue our coverage. This on International Quds Day. Have you already been seeing things are heating up here in Iran in various cities as protesters have been taking to the streets now, starting to take to the streets to commemorate International Quds Day. And also here in Tehran, we have the actual funeral procession of the martyrs whose bodies have just been returned from the Israeli terrorist attack on the Iranian consular office in Damascus. So we'll continue with our coverage of all of these. I'd like to welcome my next guest to the program. I believe if he is with me, out of Tehran University, professor and political analyst Fuad Izzadi. Do I have you, Fuad?
Yes. How are you?
Okay, good morning. Thank you so much. Let me just say to our viewers, you're also looking at several screen images there of different demonstrations that are taking place in different cities throughout the country. Well, Professor Izzadi, thanks so much for being with us. When we look at, I was just talking to a previous guest on the significance of what we're seeing today, and we start off 1979 when Imam Khomeini declared this day as International Quds Day, and basically Iran was alone, but we see the strength of the resistance today. I want to talk about the significance of the resistance, and especially what the resistance had been doing the last 6 months and what has been taking place, that the Zionist regime, despite being so well equipped, yes, they have been able, they are successful in committing genocide against, of course, women and kids, but from a military perspective, they have done nothing they have gained nothing in Gaza. And I want to talk about that and the importance of the resistance, the Palestinian resistance, and also outside the other part of the resistance.
You know, let me disagree with you a little bit. This International Quds Day started right after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. But the Palestinian cause was with us since the 1948 creation of the Zionist entity. And in fact, the leaders that created the revolution, Imam Khomeini, other his students, others that were involved with the revolution, supported the Palestinian cause many years before the revolution. Iran was a puppet of the United States and a puppet of Israel. Israelis were quite visible in Iran. They had a lot of businesses. They engaged in anything that they wanted. Iran's secret police, the torturers at Sabak were trained by the Israelis. The Iranian intelligence was organized by Israelis. Shah was cooperating with Israel, selling oil to Israel, providing other services to Israel. And this is one of the reasons we had the Islamic Revolution. It was not possible for Iranians to see their country at the service of Israelis and Zionists that had occupied Palestine. It was, you know, in comparison to other countries, Iran before the Islamic Revolution was much closer to Israel than many other countries, with the maybe exception of Turkey, which continues to actually, up to today, have diplomatic relations with Israel and has trade with Israel. With the exception of Turkey, you know, at that time in 1979, before that, many Arab countries did not have any diplomatic relations, official diplomatic relations with Israel, and they stayed away in a lot of areas that Shah was willing to cooperate with Israel. So in 1979, when the Islamic Revolution happened, Iran joined this pro-Palestinian movement that started many, many years before the revolution. So Iran's contribution is not starting the support for Palestine. Iran's contribution was to Islamize the support for Palestine. Before the 1979 revolution, Palestinian cause was supported by many leftist organizations which continue to support Palestine today, which is good. It's, you know, any support is good, whether it's from the left or any other place. It was a nationalism issue for a lot of Arabs. So these were two main characteristics of the Palestinian cause. One, looking at Palestine as a liberation movement of the left, and a nationalism issue. What Iran did was to introduce Islam into the equation, and that is the reason you have a Palestinian cause today, because if the Palestinian cause depended on the left thought or nationalism, it would have been destroyed many, many years ago. But the introduction of Islam into equation, with the creation of Islamic Jihad first and then Hamas as a second organization, you had a revival of the Palestinian cause with an Islamic perspective. And this is due to Iran. It's not due to any other country. You know, we had a branch of Ikhwan al-Muslimin in Palestine for many, many years. But their practice was not revolutionary in nature. Fatih Shaghari, martyr that started Islamic Jihad. They realized that that practice of Muslim Brotherhood was not going to get Palestinians any better. So when the revolution happened, he started studying Imam Khomeini's thought. He wrote a book about Imam Khomeini, and then he started established Islamic Jihad in Palestine. After the establishment of Islamic Jihad in Palestine, Ikhwan al-Muslimin in Palestine realized that this is the correct way. The practice of Fatih Shaghari and the thought of Imam Khomeini was the way to go. And so Hamas was created, and this revolutionary spirit based in Islam started in Palestine, and that was the main contribution of Iran, and that is why International Quds Day is important. You know, in the last 6 months, you have had many organizations all over the world demonstrating about Palestine. In Iran, almost every week, we had demonstrations about Palestine. But this is the first International Quds Day after the start of genocide in October 7th. And that is significant because it's all about this day and what it's why it's significant, because it basically reminds everybody about the role that the Islamic Revolution played in what we see today.
Indeed, indeed. Well, viewers, you're looking at the images coming out of various cities throughout the Islamic Republic of Iran this morning. You were looking at images from Mashhad, Tehran, Qom, and Yazd. And, of course, we'll be looking at images throughout the coming from various cities throughout the country. And already we're seeing that the people are turning out in mass once again. As I said earlier, probably at the start of the most of the demonstrations were just about 15, 16 minutes ago, but already we see the numbers are very large, and especially we're looking at the wide angle images that we saw out of Mashhad and Yazd there, that people are turning out in mass. And of course, in addition to the International Quds Day demonstration rally, we also have the martyrs out coming from Damascus from the Israeli terrorist act on the consular section of the Iranian embassy in Damascus. And of course, the people have turned out to say their farewell to the martyrs. I'd also like to welcome my next guest to this program. Out of Tehran, Said Mohammad Marandi, university professor and political analyst. Thank you so much for being with us, Said Marandi. You know, we've been talking about all morning the significance of Quds Day and the foresight that Imam Khomeini had. I mean, if we look at where Iran was in 1979, and it's really interesting because I've studied this a lot about Imam Khomeini and the timing. As we know, the first Palestinian embassy was opened in Iran, and it was shortly after the victory of the revolution. And our previous guest was just talking about, it wasn't just from 1979, but even prior to that, there was a speech by Imam Khomeini back in 1963 in Qom, where he was condemning the previous regime and the relationship with the Zionist entity. I want to talk about that significance, that not only for Imam Khomeini, but of course for the Islamic Republic. What is it about Palestine that it is of such importance and have been of such importance for the Islamic Republic?
Before the revolution, the revolutionaries were always speaking about Palestine as well as South Africa in their attacks on the Shah's regime and on their criticisms and with regards to their, the foreign policy of the government. Their criticisms were often focused on the regime's support for Israel and apartheid South Africa. Of course, Iran's dependency on the United States and the West in general was always in the background, but these two particular foreign policy issues were of great importance to the revolutionaries. So sometimes when people ask me why is Iran supporting the Palestinian cause, and because of anti-Iranian propaganda, they think that this is Iran has some sort of self-serving agenda. I always remind them that if you go back and look at the statements and texts and the speeches of the revolutionaries even before the revolution, the language on these issues was the same as it is today. The two, of course, Palestine is very important because of Quds and because it is a holy land, and Quds was the first Qibla for Muslims. So that obviously has a great significance. The second is that it is in our region. It is much closer to Iran, for example, than is South Africa. But I think the fundamental reason for Iran's support for the Palestinian cause is the same as why they supported South Africa and the resistance in South Africa. When the revolution happened, the first thing that Iran did when it came to foreign policy was that it immediately cut off ties with Israel, but it also immediately cut off ties with the regime in South Africa. And Iran began to fund and support the Palestinian cause and Yasser Arafat and the PLO were back then the main movement, so Iran supported them. But also Iran did the same for South Africa. Iran started supporting opposition groups, the ANC, the Pan-African Congress, among others, and the military resistance against apartheid South Africa. So just as, for example, today Iran is supporting Hamas and Islamic Jihad and other resistance groups, they were doing the same thing for South Africa back then. And when the apartheid regime in South Africa ultimately collapsed, Iran restored ties with the country, and it continues to have very good relations with the South African government and the South African people. In future, when the apartheid regime in Palestine collapses, and I don't think it will last very long, I don't know if it'll collapse in a year or in 10 years, but when it does collapse, Iran will restore ties with the government in Palestine, and Jews, Christians, and Muslims, when they live together as equal human beings in Palestine, that will be the ideal situation for Iran. So I think the issue of it being Palestine being close to home, the issue of Al-Quds being of key importance for Muslims and Islam, these two issues are significant. These two reasons are important. But the number one reason is that this is a humanitarian issue. It is a major violation of human rights. These are racist regimes, they were, along with South Africa, ethno-supremacist regimes, and Iran, as a religious state, cannot do business, cannot accept, cannot legitimize either of them, either of those entities. Fortunately, one is now gone, but as long as the Israeli regime continues to exist, Iran cannot accept its legitimacy.
Okay, well, Fuad Ezzadi, looking at, you had mentioned earlier about, of course, during the previous regime inside of Iran, that even during that time that the revolutionaries back then supported the Palestinian issue. And of course, the Iranians were, the Iranian regime supported the Israelis. Now we fast forward 45 years from that time. because back then the Arab nations, that most of them did not have relations with the Israeli regime. We fast forward to today and we see a reversal that, of course, now it's been 45 years that Iran has been leading the resistance and trying to help the Palestinians. But we see a lot of the Arab nations, at least the governing entities, bodies of these nations, that they had established relations with Israel, either openly or secretly. And even during the last 6 months, we have seen, unfortunately, Muslim nations that have been helping the Israeli regime deal with the Red Sea blockade by the around that blockade. So tell me, what has happened and why are we seeing such, if we want to say, being passive by some of these Arab regimes or basically working in cahoots with the Israeli regime? What has happened?
I'll make 2 points here. The first point is the fact that with the genocide that we have been witnessing in the last 6 months, Iran is the only country that has lost soldiers, generals, in this struggle against the genocidal regime. No other Muslim or Arab country in the last 6 months has the experience that Iran has had. You know, General Zahedi was very dear to Iran. He had a lot of experience. He was a commander, a very competent commander during the imposed war on Iran in the 1980s. And he continued his service. He was a major figure in Syria and Lebanon when it came to resisting Israeli aggressions against these two countries. So losing him is obviously very, very sad. The good news is that Iran has a lot of generals like him, people with experience and knowledge, and he will be replaced by someone who's going to be as competent as he was. And the second issue is the fact that Iranians are proud that it is their country that is supporting the Palestinian cause, not only with rhetoric, but with bullets, by giving Palestinians missiles. Everybody has realized that the only way Palestine will be free is through this type of resistance. Palestinians experience negotiating with the Israelis for many, many years and got nothing, absolutely nothing. And one reason that they are in such difficulties is because they lost that time with negotiations without any results. Today, as you mentioned, we have a number of Arab countries, Muslim countries, that continue to have diplomatic relations with Israel. They continue to have trade with Israel. They continue to have intelligence cooperation with Israel. The oil that Israel has and is using to engage in this genocide, it generally comes from the Muslim world, using the puppet governments that the United States has in this part of the world. And Iran is an exception to that situation that you see. Iranian soldiers, Iranian generals are in the forefront of support for the Palestinian cause. That is why you see Iranian generals targeted. You don't see generals from any other Arab or Muslim country targeted. And Iran's friends and members of this axis of resistance. So you have Hezbollah commanders targeted. In Yemen, we have had number of martyrs with the operation that Ansar Allah is conducting in Yemen. The people who are watching Press TV now, and they are generally supportive of the Palestinian cause, and they are Muslims and non-Muslims. One thing they realize, and that's why that may be the reason they're watching for TV, is the fact that with a huge cost to Iran's economy, a huge cost to the for people of Iran, Iran is supporting the Palestinian cause in any possible way, in any with all its means, and that is something that people are proud of. That's why you see these pictures on your screen, the people coming for the International Quds Day, people are coming to say farewell to General Zahedi and his colleagues, and this is quite unique to Iran, and this is the result of the 1979 Islamic Revolution.
Indeed.
So what Iran says and what Iran practices is the same.
And thank you so much for being with us. As you're saying that, we're looking at these live images coming out of Tehran. People are gathering in mass for this International Quds Day. Thanks so much, Fuad Izzadi, University Professor and Political Analyst out of Tehran. Said Mohammed Madan, the University Professor and Political Analyst also out of Tehran. Thank you, viewers, for staying with us. We're going to take a short break, and we will be back with our continual coverage today, International Quds Day. Stay tuned, please.
Welcome back. This is the live coverage of World Quds Day. It's 10:31 a.m. Tehran time. And here I'm Atef Erfani. Here I am with you with my colleague Mehran Derakhshande. And as you may know, this year the World Quds Day is different from the previous ones, as the fabricated Zionist regime of Israel has launched an all-out genocidal war against the people of Gaza for 6 months now. The world is witness to gruesome scenes of the crimes of Zionists in Gaza, while most of the so-called international organizations have kept silent, as the main international body, the United Nations, for a long time has turned into a machine of giving statistics and numbers and expressing sorrow towards the unprecedented crimes of the top epitome of terrorism, Israel. In view of this, the only way to get rid of this cancerous tumor in the region is to unite all Muslim nations and freedom-seeking people in the world.
That's right. And this year, of course, the World Quds Day rallies and marches, just like every year, are taking place throughout in cities and countries throughout the world. But this year, there's added poignancy because just on 1st of April, the Israeli regime launched a devastating aerial attack on the Iranian consular building, part of the Iranian embassy in Damascus, Syria, and at least 13 people were martyred in that attack. So this has given the World Quds Day rallies and marches in Tehran added poignancy this year. And already we can say that those rallies and marches are currently underway in the Iranian capital, Tehran, and in many towns and cities throughout the length and breadth of the Islamic Republic.
For the information of our listeners, the father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, announced the final Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan as the World Quds Day, actually in a bid to draw attention of world Muslims towards the issue of Palestine and help uproot the cancerous tumor of Israel in the region. Since Imam Khomeini's announcement in 1979, Muslims and free-spirited people in the world have held demonstrations in support for Palestine, from New York to London to Paris to Karachi to Kashmir, Tehran, different cities of Iran. All people show their solidarity with Palestinians. That's and right. Their cause.
That's right. As the founder of the Islamic Republic, the late Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul, used to say, International Quds Day doesn't just belong to the Palestinians, it belongs to the entire Islamic Ummah. It's a day for Islam and for Muslims.
Or as they say, the Palestinian issue is not just a Muslim issue, and it's the issue of humanity. Since this year, the World Quds Day has got high importance as the issue of Palestine has become the top priority for many nations all over the world. Zionists have tried for over seven decades, for over 75 years, to depict the occupation of Palestine and establishment of the fake Israeli regime as an inevitable process in the world. Therefore, from day one, they started to forge historical record for the Jewish state. They have always considered themselves as the chosen nation which has been wronged and denied their ancestral land. Historical research on Judaism and Israel reveals that almost all of the sources and references available in various circles have been produced and authored by the writers and historians of this current.
That's right.
And actually, in other words, there is no source outside the tight circle of Jewish community. Consequently, the result of research will be what the producers like.
That's right. And of course, these rallies and marches are being held in many towns and cities throughout the world. In Tehran, huge crowds are currently gathering, and the marches and rallies are currently underway in the Iranian capital, Tehran, with huge numbers of people participating.
And actually, these rallies are highlighted more than ever. I mean, more than the previous World Quds Days after what happens after October 7th, 2023, Al-Aqsa storm. It got bold and it was highlighted. Zionists, in reaction to their humiliating defeat in Al-Aqsa storm, launched an all-out war from air and ground against the tiny Gaza Strip and with over 2 million people. They have justified their attacks with the pretext of annihilation of Hamas and freeing their captives. But 6 months after the Zionist regime's aggression and genocide in Gaza, they not only have failed to reach their goals, but also they have sustained great losses and blows.
That's right. The situation, in particularly in the besieged Gaza Strip, means that there's added importance to Quds Day rallies and marches this particular year. And we'll be following. You can follow us with our rolling coverage of the events on World Quds Day. We now go over to Press TV headquarters for our coverage of International Quds Day.
Muslims all around the world. And what I can tell you about this rally here in Palestine Square is that I can see people here waving the Palestinian flag, the Hezbollah flag, and they are chanting songs in different languages, including in Arabic, Farsi, and English. And I can see people from all walks of life, from different beliefs, and from children, women. They are here to actually express their solidarity with Palestinian people. And we know that this year's International Quds Day actually is different because of the ongoing Israeli genocide against the Palestinian people in the besieged Gaza Strip. And we know that, as you mentioned, Al-Quds Day is the last Friday of Ramadan on the whole, actually, Islamic calendar. And I can see that there is some banners and some actually words that has written Mahe Palestine, which means the month of Palestine, and which actually shows that this month actually has been dedicated to the Palestinian people. And I can see even actually people try to share the reward of their citation of Quran with the Palestinian people. And as you can see behind me, people are gathering here in the Palestine Square to express the solidarity with the Palestinian people and their outrage against the Israeli atrocities against the Palestinian people in the besieged Gaza Strip. Back to you.
All right. Thanks so much for that, Farzan Ashurian. I hear it's very loud there, so I'll let you go. And, of course, people are still starting to gather as this protest, the demonstration, also ends in Friday prayer, with Friday prayer, which is a couple of hours away. And as it is the month of Ramadan, people tend to come out later, and we'll be continuing covering what's happening in Tehran and beyond in the Islamic Republic of Iran today, International Quds Day. I'd like to welcome my next guest to the program, out of London, activist and political analyst Batul Sobati. Do I have you with me, Batul? Okay, great. Great to see you. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, let's talk about Quds Day this year and what has taken place from the last 6 months, because there is a greater awareness now of the whole situation of Palestine with the 6 months of this genocide that has taken place. Now, you're in London. I want to talk about that side of things, because we have seen regular protests taking place since this all began, and numbers that are growing with Muslims and non-Muslims across the board. Do you see a greater awareness of the Palestinian situation taking place where you are?
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. Marzia, the swing in public mood against the Israeli occupation entity is not something that's just regional. You know, it's not just the Arab countries like Jordan and Egypt that are rejecting essentially their country's normalization of ties with the occupation entity. That is definitely something that's spanning the whole world. I would say something that's more so in the global north, given that inherently the countries in the west, the citizens of these countries feel inherently complicit. This war is essentially America's war. It is America that's leading the battle on behalf of Israel, and Israel cannot breathe without the American oxygen. You know, especially if you look at, for example, Britain, you know, you have the whole movement to shut Elbit down. You have Palestine Action, essentially, where they're taking over the roofs of these weapons manufacturers, and they're inflicting harm, direct harm, on you know, imperialist interests related to Israel. So, you know, we are seeing globally, you know, bold changes that are being taken in official countries. For example, in South America, you know, in Brazil, you know, cutting diplomatic ties, in Colombia, for example, you know, that announcement, but not just in the global south. I mean, even in Poland, you know, before yesterday, the Polish prime minister, they recalled the Israeli ambassador over the attack that essentially killed the workers in the World Kitchen, in the World Central Kitchen, and one of them was a Polish worker, for example. You know, we're seeing the criminalization of Israel through international bodies like the ICJ. That's unprecedented. Never has Israel been in the hot seat where it is essentially indicted and it's being treated as a criminal. We're seeing today Europe's lack of enthusiasm to support Israel. And the reason that it's not willing to support Israel in the way that it did 6 months ago is because ultimately Israel has proven to be a failure. It's not been able to achieve a single military strategic objective on the ground. And so on what basis should Europe continue to fund this war machine when they're not fulfilling their interests? And we know politics runs on power and ability. And if you're a weak entity, then you have no place in the dirty world of politics. And ultimately, Israel has reached a point where it has no red lines. Israel has made it very clear through its attack on the workers and the aid workers in the World Kitchen Center, in the World Central Kitchen, sorry, that it wants to essentially lead to no life in Gaza. That is the Israeli occupation entity solution. It is to completely cut life in Gaza. It is to send a message and a signal that we want to starve these people to death in Gaza, because that is the only solution, and that is the only kind of solution that we can put on the table. Why? Because we can't go forward with the American two-state solution. That is essential suicide for Israel. The one-state solution cannot work because that will compromise our majority Jewish status. And we cannot reoccupy Gaza because we've lost militarily on the ground. So the only thing Israel can do right now is to continue bombing and to create unbearable conditions for the people in Gaza, such that their hope is what? The people of Gaza will give up. The people of Gaza will despair. But ultimately, what is happening in the West is we're seeing the internal collapse and the division over this issue, and that is applying real pressure on Western interests to the point where, you know, Britain is coming out, lawyers are coming out and are saying, you know, Britain is implicated in war crimes by supporting the Israeli occupation entity. The West is right now at a position where it's not able to cover Israel's crimes due to the way that it's been so brazen and open to the masses, not just on social media, but the Israeli occupation entity has very much helped in this manner by being so obvious about its intent for genocide. Israel has exposed itself as a rogue entity, and today we're seeing world thinkers discussing the inevitability of Israel's demise, its lack of ability to survive in light of its failures, because once there has been a security penetration in this militarized state that's inherently a military base that was turned into a country, that's Israel. Israel is not an inherent country. It's a military base that was turned into a country. So what happens when its security has been jeopardized? And that's ultimately what October the 7th was all about, and why there is no turning back from October the 7th. Because once you've jeopardized the security of Israel, the settlers inherently feel unsafe. They are going to be unwilling to continue living in that land. So ultimately, what has happened since October the 7th has exposed the masks and the values advocated by the West. And the gradual shift in the Western positions means ultimately that the West is unlikely to rely on a project that has become ineffective, that has failed. Gaza has demonstrated this in this manner. And the pressure of the people, the pressure of them on their rulers will increase this distance between the countries in Europe and America and the Israeli occupation entity. Israel has put itself in a position where it's become a global pariah. And this is all, by the way, as a result of Al-Quds Day, the spirit that Al-Quds Day has essentially infused, because pre-1979 cannot be compared to post-1979. It was the critical point in 1979 where the Palestinian file was taken very seriously, and there was efforts to galvanize and mass mobilize the consciousness and to revive the free people of the world, Muslim and non-Muslims and beyond, globally, towards this cause, towards this issue. It is the spirit of Al-Quds Day that is why today we find America at a turning point. We are finding America seeking to shift the role of the Israeli occupation entity that no longer meets its interests and its ambitions. And the current American strategy for Israel is one by virtue of continuity. You know, Israel's almost like that illegitimate injured child that it has to attend to. So yes, America has been providing timid support towards Israel under the strategic objective of defeat the Gazan resistance, do it for us, because the Gazan resistance is not just an existential threat to you, O Israel, but it is to us in the region, it's to our interests. Israel is not independent, it's an American project for the region. So we are right now seeing the timid support of America before the policies will shift post-ceasefire, and that's all thanks to the spirituality that Al-Quds Day has.
Stay with me, Batul, so sorry to interrupt you. Stay with me, just explain to our viewers what they're seeing on their screens. Of course, you were seeing from various cities inside, of the Islamic Republic of Iran this morning, as people are gathering on the streets throughout the country in various cities and expressing their solidarity with the Palestinians and condemning the Zionist regime. I'd also like to get my next guest in on this discussion, Harley Schlenker, spokesman of the International Schiller Institute out of Germany. Thanks so much for being with us, Harley. Well, again, Harley, we are on an international, this is an international Quds Day that, of course, the last Friday of the month of Ramadan, that was, of course, by Imam Khomeini, this was established over 44 years ago. We see a big difference in how the world is reacting to the Palestinian situation this year around on this International Quds Day. Of course, looking at the last 6 months and the unbelievable genocide that we have been witnessing live it has had an effect. I want to talk about that effect, Hartley, on the people of the world, on the consciousness of the world, and making people aware of not only Israeli regime, but also its sponsors, its partners in crime, the Western hegemonic front.
Well, one of the problems is that the Western media continues to attempt to cover up for Israeli genocide or to excuse it. And you hear over and over and over again that you have to blame Hamas for this, that Hamas is the one that created the situation with the October 7th attack, and therefore the genocide against the Palestinian people is the just consequence of Israel seeking vengeance for the attack. Now, the problem is that, as we saw, the International Court of Justice had extensive hearings on this, which the point was made over and over and over again, that no matter what happened on October 7th, it doesn't justify the slaughter of children and innocents, the withholding of food and medicine and fuel. And this is having an impact largely because social media and the, I would say, press TV is one of the reasons that it's hard to suppress the story. Al Jazeera, the story is getting out in the West, and the pressure is growing on the Biden administration. But we're now at an extremely dangerous moment. And I think it's very important that these demonstrations today take place and show that the spirit of resistance is not just a spirit of resistance, but a commitment to reverse the injustice that goes back to the 67 war, the taking of Jerusalem among the other territories, and 75 years of settler colonialism. The important thing in terms of this is that there are people in the West who intend to turn the situation in Gaza against Iran. And we're seeing that now with the Israeli strike in Damascus. This is something that the Israelis know very well. They're not succeeding in the operation in Gaza. So what they're going to try to do is provoke a reaction from Iran that would then justify an American military response. And I think it's important, therefore, that people get out in the streets and demonstrate to show that there's no excuse for an American military response, that this has nothing to do with U.S. security and everything to do with an injustice that goes back more than 75 years.
Yes, indeed. And as you're speaking, we're looking at live images out of Tehran, actually, as not only the International Quds Day rallies taking place, but also a farewell to the seven martyrs who were killed in Syria the other day by the Israeli regime. Their bodies have returned to Iran, and the funeral will be later, but their procession, their people have turned out to bid farewell to these martyrs. You're seeing the pictures there of three of them who were killed in Syria the other day. I think we're going to cross over. Let me see if I have my correspondent. Is she available, Fatima Masumi? Hi, Fatima. Tell us what you have, please.
Yes, Marzia, I'm here. Do you have my voice?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Thank you. Well, I'm here in Palestine Square, and the Iranian Jewish community has joined the people in Tehran, and they are expressing their strong solidarity with the Palestinians. Also, they are condemning the recent attack of the Israeli regime on the Iranian consular of the in the capital of Syria in Damascus. I have here my guest, Mr. Samaya Najafabadi. He is the Iranian representative of Jews in the Iranian parliament. Mr. Samaya, yes, I have your... There is a saying in the Torah that there's a verse in Torah, love your fellow man as you love yourself. Would you please explain about this and also why you're here?
ترجمه کنید. من دکتر همایون سامیه علاوه بر اینکه نماینده ایرانیان
as well as being the representative of Jews in the Iranian parliament, I also head the council for the Jews in Tehran. And as the representatives of the Jews, Jewish community, I would like to say that the Jewish society, alongside their brothers, Muslim brothers and sisters, just like the previous years, have taken part in these rallies, and we condemn the aggression by the Zionist regime against Palestine, specifically the people of Gaza, and the massacre that is taking place in Gaza. The people of Gaza, not only due to the brutal bombardment by the Israeli regime, are being killed there, but they're also dying due to starvation, lack of medicine. They're also losing their lives there and are being martyred there. Anyhow, any brutality and oppression throughout the world will not be sustained and cannot last. And the Zionist regime must know that with every drop of blood that is spilled in Gaza, thousands of soldiers will grow out of those blood. We hope that the people of Palestine will achieve their rights one day and return to their rightful country, and the region would see peace and security. I would also like to say that always the founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, say that the Zionism is different from Jews. And we would like to underline this fact that Zionism is a political party, but being Jew has a history of 5,000 years, and Zionism is abusing the name of Jewishness. And I would like to say that all the Jews throughout the world would take part in rallies throughout the in different countries.
Thank you. Back to you.
Thank you so much. I was Fatima Masmi, our correspondent on the ground there at Palestine Square, talking to one of the individuals, Iranians, of course, the Jewish community that live inside of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and also he happens to be a parliamentarian, and talking about the differences, of course, between Zionism and Judaism, and that all Jews should be condemning the genocide that is taking place against the Palestinian people. I'd like to cross back over to London now. Batul Sabeti, thanks so much for staying with us, Batul. Batul, what about the significance of the Day of Quds and what it can do as far as bringing even more awareness to the people around the world?
Absolutely. Commemorating Al-Quds Day is ultimately all about reviving Al-Quds in the souls of not just Muslims, but the free people around the world. So ultimately, the fact that very strategically, you know, Imam Khomeini picked Al-Quds on the last Friday of Shahr Ramadan, you know, he's trying to indicate, especially to the Muslim Ummah, that actually standing up for Al-Quds is on par with divine worship. It's actually one of the highest forms of worship that you can do, and that is forbidding evil, so to speak. So commemorating Al-Quds Day, ultimately, we are seeing the fruits of it today, because it is the spirit of Al-Quds Day that has created an integrated resistance axis, whose slogan is, in fact, Al-Quds. You know, and Palestine is that focal point of unity in the resistance axis today. And ultimately, so we see that Al-Quds Day has been that point of unity between Muslims and all free people around the world. And also, more tangibly, what has it done? It has constituted a constant reminder for the Muslim Ummah to reject normalization. And we've seen this increase year after year. We are seeing that Al-Quds Day is the major obstacle for the American project to not just secure normalization, but the two-state solution in the region. It is ultimately reviving the hope of the oppressed to stand up to the most arrogant and powerful countries. And ultimately, it is presenting that true, also non-traditional concept of Islam. As Imam Khomeini puts it, it is expressing the authentic Muhammadan Islam, because it's the call for human liberation from all kinds of injustice. You know, despite all the efforts that the superpowers have put into dividing the people of this region, dividing the Muslim Ummah across the sectarian lines, you know, painting Iran as an entity that has inherently materialistic or imperialist